Hey yo, so check it. By popular request, Coffee Black presents our first ever coffee subscription program, the Brew Culture Subscription Box. We've gained so much positive feedback and interest from our growing community for our Gucci Mane blend that we've sought to bring you a monthly subscription via our website. So what does that mean for you? One, mad money savings, yo. For $35, you'll receive two 12-ounce bags that can make up to 40 pour-overs. That's 90 cents a cup. Compare that to your local Starbucks price. Two, inside perks. You'll be first in line for our newest and latest releases, including monthly admittance to the private brew-ups, our monthly coffee ciphers happening in our private Facebook group. Three, you'll be supporting a Black-owned business that continues to seek to build up the Black community in Memphis and worldwide through reclaiming Black coffee culture.
We're the founder of Coffee Black with my wife, Renata Henderson, and we're all about educating people about the Black history of coffee and using hip-hop and Black culture to reimagine a Black future. I'm here today with some really dope people. First and foremost, we got Sean and Chelsea, both from Stay Golden Coffee in Nashville. What up, family?
Yes, sir. Hello.
Yeah, you know, we might say Cashville, Tennessee. You know what I mean? That's how we talk about it down here. But really excited to have you all in the call today. We also have, I believe, Asnake, but I think we've been having some issues with connectivity. Asnake, can you hear us? All right, looks like we may be out as far as connecting with him today, but hopefully we can bring this back in at a later point and talk about it, man. I'm excited about our conversation today. It is bright and early. We all have dropped our kids off at school. Some of us have had coffee and some of us have not. I'm not going to say who has had what at this point, but I am excited to talk about the 1616 project and some of the motivation behind it. And I think it's really fitting because the concept for this project really came from, you know, our conversation all the way back in 2020. So, man, could you give a little bit of background, just one, on who you all are, and then two, how we got connected last year?
Yeah, so this is Sean. I'm one of the partners at Stay Golden. Bart and I got connected on Instagram probably about, I don't know, what would you say now? Maybe about 7-8 years ago?
Yep.
So we've kind of been in that just coffee people follow coffee people for, you know, quite some time now. And just always been seeing the things you've been doing in Memphis. I particularly love Memphis. I'm obsessed with it. I'm obsessed with the Grizzlies. So that's one reason.
Yeah. But, back when the Grizzlies were good.
So I'm still obsessed with it, even though they're not as good right now. So, but yeah, I think that's kind of just like seeing you on Instagram, seeing all the stuff you were doing with coffee down there, you know, helping culture grow. And it just always kind of interests me. And I've always kind of been trying to follow stuff with Memphis. So, you know, just, seeing what you were doing and all the, like the new push with the brand and all the really cool things you had coming out, I just felt like it was really a good time to connect last year and get something rolling, find some way that we can just help what you're doing, help what, you know, we love what you're doing. So just to be a part of that and, you know, see you flourish, see your company flourish. And that's a little bit from our end.
Yeah, man. I think we really got a chance to, y'all, I mean, I think we connected really pretty heavily when our company was at a crucial point. You know, I always tell people, like, you know, I started Coffee Black like we were selling drugs. So, like, I was, we didn't have any investors or capital or, you know, anything. We just kind of were like, man, we wanted to really share our passion for coffee with our community, with the Black community. And all the wonderful things we found out about Black history with other Black people here in the States and around the world. So we just started doing it, right? And so when you don't have capital and you're in coffee, one thing that always is up is like, where are we going to get the next sack of green coffee or the next half a sack or the next 20 pounds? Like, I'm always kind of fiending to figure out where this is going to come from. And we hit a point where the people who we have been getting coffee from ran out of coffee, which I didn't know that was a thing that could happen. Like, I was a new in coffee. I just thought it was perpetual. You know, I didn't know you could run out of, but it's a crop, right? It's a harvest. So, of course, it's going to run out. And I, like, freaked out. I was like, what do we do? It's gone. So, when that happened, you know, of course, you know, our business is running on super slim margins because all of our capital is our, all of our revenue is also our operating expenses. So yeah. We were like, where are we going to get coffee from? So I just hit up all the coffee people I knew. And I was like, yo, could I buy some of your coffee from you? And man, we had a lot of people reach out. You are one of the people who supported. And not only that, I think this was kind of important, man. You also connected me with the resources to be able to start sourcing coffee more directly from importers. And so I think that was pretty important. And it was pretty powerful. So I think for me, like, kind of what was the mentality? What was that like getting that call, like, from another coffee company? Like, yo, can we buy some green coffee? Like, what was that like for you all? And I mean, why did y'all say yes? You know, what kind of made you decide? Because that's kind of unorthodox in the industry.
No, I don't think it's as unorthodox as you might think. Man, I've been there. We, you know, when we started Steadfast Coffee, you just, you know, you get. I remember particularly at the time you had hit and blown up on orders, and
man,
you were just like swamped.
Well, we can get into that too. So like what happened was, you know, after this was actually before I knew George Floyd died, right? This was my anniversary with my wife. Oh, this way, it looks like Asnake just joined the call. Hey, how you doing, Asnake? Hello? Okay, looks like we may still have some issues, some connectivity issues with him, but we'll just keep going. So, yeah, this was right before, actually, we got the news about George Floyd. It was my wife and I's anniversary, and I saw a post from a friend that it said something that, you know, it's kind of common in the Black community. It's a little cliche comment, like, you know, love Black people. I wish people love Black people like they love our culture. And, you know, being in coffee was one of those moments where I was like, man, I think this is true for coffee, too. It's one of these Black discoveries that and, you know, it was spread around the world through the slave trade. So it's not just a Black discovery, but, you know, there's some equity in the sweat labor of how this thing grew. Then it's crazy that there's like no interest in the people who propagated this good. And especially once we got the news about George Floyd, it was like, man, this kind of makes me. It just was a statement I wanted to make. And so I just made it on my phone. You know, I just typed it up on my phone, threw it on Instagram, and it immediately got a ton of feedback. People were like, yo, can I get this? Is there a way I can purchase this? And it was just like, it was like a little random. It was like the night before my wife and I's anniversary. So I wasn't really trying to release the product. I was like, I mean, yeah, I'll throw it up as a, like a poster you can buy, a dropship poster. And, yeah, it was crazy. Like, he was like, people just was like, nah, we need this on a shirt. And so then it was like, well, how do I do that? So then we had to go, you know, throw it up real quick. And one of my mentors was like, hey, man, I think this could be big. You know, you might be able to sell 20 of these shirts. So do you think you want to lose that ownership if you do drop shipping? And so then that made me proposition people to say, hey, we want to donate a portion of this fund to our group or our individuals or our people who are doing protesting here in the city. Because yeah. You know, I just talked about how important bail bonds are and Black businesses are to support bail bonds for activists. And so I was like, okay, cool. Well, man, maybe I can just, maybe we'll do a pre-order. Maybe we might get 20 pre-orders and then I'll donate a portion. Man, we got, we sold like 1,000 shirts that month, bro. It was like, I'm not even exaggerating. Like, so yeah. We went from, you know, average grossing a month looking like maybe $1,000 a month on the website, $2,000 a month, you know, if I dropped the album, maybe we would hit $4,000 to like $60,000 in a month. Like,
I love that.
Yeah, it was amazing. And one of the things that was difficult is I had no infrastructure for that, right? So
yeah. And now what do I do? Yeah.
Yeah, now what do I do? And then all the capital is mixed up because it's like where part of it's going toward fulfillment, part of it's going toward I gotta order a ton of inventory, part of it's going toward equipment. We had to order new stuff. We had to hire people, when I say hire, I mean pay for dinner for people to come help us. And so in the midst of that, coffee sales also spiked. And so, man, we thought we were doing all right. We was like, we got coffee for the next couple months, you know? And at that time we were maybe doing a sack every couple months, you know? And so that went super quick. So, I mean, I'm glad to know it's kind of industry standard. It felt weird for me, and none of my coffee friends had ever done that before. So I was like, I feel like I'm going out on a limb here. But, man, it's cool to know that you all were willing to do that. And you all also ordered a bunch of shirts, right?
Yeah. One for everybody.
Yeah, I saw when Chelsea was in the chat that she had her shirt on. So it's like y'all ordered a grip of shirts and supported. And so I think for me, like from us connecting, and we can talk even about Steadfast. I don't know how much time you have, but for me, like I had a weird opinion about Nashville. I feel like there's like this weird sibling rivalry between Memphis and Nashville sometimes. Sometimes it has like racial undertones. Like, I don't know. I remember being in Memphis and being like, oh, people in Nashville don't like us. So when I got into coffee, which already has like a racially undertone thing when you're coming in as a minority, I was like, I don't like Nashville, right? And then my brother-in-law lives in Nashville. So I started visiting him and I was like, okay, well, I like him, but I don't like Nashville, right? And so he was like, yo, the coffee's really good. And I was like, I went to some shops and I was like, okay, I like coffee in Nashville and I like my brother. But it still was one of those things where like I never found a shop where I had some amazing coffee, you know, shout out to Sump and man, who are some of the other shops up there? Barista Parlor and Crema. But I was like, man, I haven't found a shop that feels like, man, I feel home here. And when we went to Steadfast, bro, it was like a totally different experience. So one of the things my wife always says as a Black woman is that it's weird how people speak to me and don't speak to her. And like one of the immediate things she noticed about Steak Golden is that people always spoke to her. Like the baristas, the staff were always super kind. Not Steak Golden, excuse me, about Steadfast, is that people always spoke to her. This is before Steak Golden was a thing. But as Steadfast always spoke to her, they were always super kind. And, you know, like, it would be weird. Like, we would walk in, and I felt like I lived in Nashville because people knew who I was, and I don't even know how that happened. But I guess it was maybe some stuff online. So it was just this cool thing where it was like, wow, I love going to Nashville now just to go to Steadfast. And so then that relationship carried forward into what you all are doing with Steak Golden. And it just became a thing where like, it was like, wow, man, this is a place where we feel really comfortable. We feel kind of like what we're trying to do is similar to like the heart that we're meeting these people in. So it was one of those things when you suggested doing a coffee collaboration together, it made perfect sense, you know?
Yeah,
man. And so I think like this is we kind of came up with this idea, this concept, basically to spread more information about the history of the colonialism of coffee, right? And for me, it was a big, big piece of knowledge to learn that coffee comes from Ethiopia, but it was also powerful to know like, wow, that the reason why we haven't heard this name or the reason why at least in the West or in African-American community specifically, we haven't learned that there's this history here is because the nature of this thing didn't spread with people giving credit where credit was due. It spread with people trying to, you know, grab some beans in the dark of night. And so there wasn't much interest in giving credit when it was taken without credit in the first place and without compensation. And so this project is kind of big, man. It's for us. It's like, this is the beginning of our educational. We're endeavoring to create a curriculum that we can use to spread knowledge about the history, the Black history of coffee. And the 1616 project is pretty much the pinnacle of that educational project. And having coffees that we're collaborating with people on is pretty big, man. It's pretty exciting. It's pretty powerful for us to be able to do that. So, man, tell us a little bit about this coffee. how you all were able to get it. I know we haven't been able to bring Asnake in. If anybody has any communication on whether or not he can hear us or anything like that, just shoot me a text message. But yeah, is there any information about the history of the coffee? What kind of led you all to this coffee? What do you love about it? Tell us a little bit about the roast profile. We can get into some coffee nerd stuff.
Yeah. So I sampled probably, man, no joke, about 50 different Ethiopian coffees, just trying to find a coffee that I felt fit the profile that, you know, I had tasted from your stuff before. And just when we talked about the Benji Nenka, the last coffee that I had.
Yeah.
So I was just really trying to match that profile, get something with some fruit, some stone fruit undertones, maybe a little floral, some dark chocolate in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like you said early on, sourcing is such a big deal. When it comes to coffee, you got to find an equitable source that, you know, treats the farmers right, treats the farmers well. You know, we've talked about this before, you and I, just about, especially getting coffee in Ethiopia, you really have to, you know, be careful about that source and who it's coming from, making sure that, you know, it's getting back to the farmers in the best way possible. So, you know, I've really enjoyed this partnership with Atlantic Specialty Coffee, and Tim Hill in particular.
Yeah, they were lifesavers when we were in that clutch situation back in June and July. That introduction was a big deal for us, man. How did y'all get connected?
We got connected. My old coffee manager, production manager here, Mark Tillman, used to work for Counterculture, and Tim Hill used to work for Counterculture as well. So he, you know, Mark said, you know, we should talk to Tim about sourcing some coffee from his, this new company that he was a part of. So, and okay. I guess Tim was the buyer kind of focused on Africa when he was working for Counterculture. So
yeah,
it was, definitely was meant to be in that department for sure.
Yeah, man. Yeah, the coffee is phenomenal, bro. Like, I've probably made 7 or 8 pour overs so far. It got in like a day ago, and I just have been like dialing it in nonstop. There was this crazy like cantaloupe note that I got. It was like cantaloupe, and then it went to like peach rings, like the candy, or like maybe like a peach Arizona tea, and then there was like white flowers. It was like really, really, really crazy, bro. I definitely dug it. I was doing it on those little mini Chemexes that they sent out for the Rico Symposium earlier in the year. So, man, I've been having a blast dialing this coffee in. We have it available at the shop right now for people to try. People have been just really, really enjoying it. And I think, man, we really wanted to do this to be able to, one, do positive collaborations across cultures. You know, like a lot of the times with coffee, unfortunately, the history of those things is like when two cultures come together and coffee's involved, it turns into a negative experience, you know? And I think we see that in 1616 coffee and in the 1616 date, right? And we see that also with like the growth of coffee. We see that with the way coffee is purchased. And we see that even in on the state side when we start selling coffee, and when we look at the way that gentrification can kind of play into that. And so the goal of the collaborations in this project is to provide coffee that doesn't do that, and to really create spaces for cultures to come as God created them, right, in their fullness, and for all of us to be able to be celebrated. And so one of my last questions for you all, because I know we got to head out soon, and Chelsea, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. When we think about like the role of, I guess you could say, anti-racism in coffee, right? And thinking about like being intentionally against, it's funny, when I was a kid, I learned one of the longest words in the dictionary. It was anti-disestablishmentarianism. And, the definition is like being against the system. Right. And that's like a loose definition of that word, because you're anti-disestablishment, which means you're kind of like pro-establishment. And so like when we think about being, you know, anti dishumanization, right? If that was going to be a word, or anti appropriation, or anti negative collaboration. What does that mean? I know you were able to be a part of something really special this year. And I know that there aren't really any easy answers, but I'd love to hear, like, what are some of your thoughts as a person in coffee on, like, what has that experience been like in the last year with all this push and move to say, like, hey, let's be more intentional about being anti-racist. And I know you've taken steps to receive intentional education around that and share that with the staff. What's that experience been like, and how does that feel different than, I guess, coffee as usual? You know, maybe pre George Floyd.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did get to participate in the Unlearning Club this past, I guess, last fall, winter. And that was, it was really, really powerful for me, just taking, you know, time to actually read about the history of colonialism and coffee. It was a lot of things where I was like, I assumed that, but like reading, you know, the firsthand accounts and, you know, reading things from back, like even in the 60s and 70s, you're just like, dang, this really sucks. And like, it's really been overlooked completely. I feel like especially before George Floyd, coffee community, for the most part, in my opinion, was pretty much just like riding by. Like, it was kind of just like, yeah, it's mostly white, but that's just kind of what it is. And like, maybe we'll make stuff about it, but there wasn't really much like action put to words at that.
It's like green bean casserole, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a white people thing, but nobody's mad about it. Like, it tastes good. I'm glad it exists. Like, every culture, I think, brings something unique in the world. And so, like, it was one of those things where I had a similar perspective. Like, oh, this is just a white people. This must be just a white people thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't mad about that growing up or getting into coffee in college. What was weird was realizing that historically it actually was the opposite.
Yeah.
That history had been lost, right? Not that there's necessarily anything wrong with, you know, all the coffee nerdery of third wave coffee, but more so saying, like, man, there's a context missing here that can add so much more to the conversation.
Right. And so I think, like, when all the George Floyd things happen, you know, like, it kind of opened a lot of people's eyes to say, we have to make changes. Like, people started recognizing, if we want to see change, we have to be that change.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as horrid as of a thing that happened, you know, I'm grateful for that outcome from it, because I think it's led to a lot of white owned roasteries, cafes saying, no, we're going to take a stand for this. We're going to risk being a little bit more political on our pages to make sure that we are being anti-racist in our actions.
Yeah.
I think really, like, what it has brought up for me is, like, how do we make a cafe space? How do we make specialty coffee not just like it's okay for Black people to be a part of it, but like we want Black people to be a part of it.
Intentionally welcoming. Yeah. And when I was in college and we were doing anti-racism training, we would say, like, it's the difference between being a welcome guest and a family member. Like, a welcome guest is someone who could come over. You're welcome to eat what we're eating. Yeah. You're welcome to watch what we're watching. But don't take your shoes off. Don't go in the fridge. You know what I mean? Don't change the channel. That type of stuff. And so there's a difference between saying, no, we're actually going to engage in community. And I have a question, and then I wanted to touch on briefly just this idea of, like, what do we do next, right? I think that was kind of what you and I spoke about. When you talk about, like, getting political, one of the things we've noticed as, like, it kind of, our brand initially is just very unapologetically Black, and that's how we built our brand. So from time to time, we'll get people who are mad about that. But I would say that's probably 0.05% of our interactions, because who we are kind of attracts the people who are interested in that, right? So the only people who are mad are people who the algorithm shows our Facebook ads to incorrectly. but like, I was curious, as we've done more collaborations, right, across cultures. So like, when we collaborated with Onyx or with Matt Priest, and now we're collaborating with you all, we found that a lot of these white companies are experiencing pushback, right, from some of their consumers, because this is a new bent or a new direction, a new aesthetic, a new type of conversation.
I think it causes people to acknowledge their racist tendencies, and that's what pisses them off.
Right.
Like, ultimately, that's what it is. Like, they see something that's uncomfortable. They see something about anti-gentrification. They see something about, you know, accepting Black people. And they're like, wait, like, I guess I've had thoughts like that before. And it's like, yeah, you should come to terms with that. Like, it is uncomfortable. And it was a wrong thought for you to have. But, like, it's like, as a white person, we are always going to have a racist tendency because we live in a biased society, like a society that was built for white people to succeed. And yep. So, of course, like, we're going to have moments where we're like, oh, I really shouldn't have thought that. But it's what you do after that. Like, do you take action and to make a positive change or a negative change?
And this is kind of how I would explain this to people. So I'm a believer in the way of Yeshua. Mm-hmm. Right? We follow the cross. And so when I would explain it to a lot of my friends who are faith-based, I would say, well, just think about it like this. You heard of the concept of indwelling sin, right? Which is this idea that in each of us, we have these proclivities to do the wrong thing, and that, you know, people in specifically of the Christian faith would be like, and even if you're not intentionally doing something wrong, the desires of our heart implicate us, right? And so we believe we live in a system, and we are created in a way where our environment pushes us, and our even our natural inclination pushes us to sin, which is why we need the Savior. So I'm like, racism is a sin.
Yes.
In the list of other things, you know, you're thinking about lust, gluttony, whatever, just add racism in there. And that's really what people are talking about when they say, you know, there's a natural proclivity to be anti-Black built into the way our system is, right? And that's different than being like, that's different than the guys in high school who were like, yo, man, check out my Confederate flag belt buckle. It's not saying that that's the same thing, but what it is saying is like we are all kind of raised on the same food of anti-Blackness, and that it takes intentionality to unlearn that. What I wanted to do was kind of read the back of the bag, because when I say like you guys want to start getting, you know, political or addressing racism, in the back, printing this, I feel like, and then sending it out with your name on it, it takes a choice, right?
Yeah.
And we kind of made that choice when we wrote what we wrote on the back of the Gucci Mane bag, because we're like, hey, this is what it is for. And we've actually seen a lot of people be very encouraged by it, you know, specifically Black people who are like, wow, this is so empowering. I didn't know this, which is why for us, like, the back of the bag is almost more important than the front these days. And so, like, the back of what's on this bag is super important. So I just wanted to read it and then get you all's kind of thoughts on it. What was your first reaction when you read it? And then also, like, have you had any pushback, or you don't have to get into the details of any interesting conversation even about, or stories of people being empowered from them receiving this or reading this. So I'm just going to read it. It says, the coffee plant was stolen from Africa at the port of Mocha in 1616 by two Dutch spies. Though the Dutch ultimately failed to cultivate their stolen goods, they did spark a global colonialization effort built on the back of Black and indigenous slave labor. The coffee plant, a plant discovered by Africans and stolen by European colonial powers, has grown into a $100 billion industry. I think it's $200 billion at this point. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the African diaspora still suffers from the effects of colonialism and slavery. The 1616 collaboration series seeks to honor the African and indigenous peoples who cultivated coffee culture then and now by bringing it to you as God intended, with no sugar and no cream. And then learn more, Coffee Black Class 1616. And then it has you all's name and your address. So if somebody be mad, they got your address, bro.
Well,
what was that experience like?
For me, it's like the bummer to me is that it is political, because yep. I don't see this as a political thing. We've let politics kind of direct the way we believe about other people.
Man.
And right.
This is not a Democratic statement or a Republican statement.
Yeah.
This is just
it's a people loving people statement.
Come on, man. Talk about it.
And that to me, it's like, you know, I have always wanted to love people, and
yeah,
I think I've met you and your wife and your kids, and like, I love you guys, and like, you're incredible at things you do. And the sad part to me is that loving people can become and look political.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where my heart is in this, and in anything that I do and take on, is just to, like, not that there isn't a political conversation, because there obviously is, but it goes way beyond that, and it's something way bigger than that to me in particular. So
for me
in any kind of pushback, I want to gear the conversation away from the politics of it and just maybe hopefully open the eyes to say, like, you know what, we're loving people, we're called to love people, and that's what we're doing. And so that's, I mean, just my heart behind it.
Yeah. Come on, bro. I just got a big amen. You know what I mean? Like, amen to that, bro. That's beautiful.
I think to your point, Sean, like, if we're talking about, you know, how do we move forward? Like, how do we as coffee professionals, how do we as people, as companies, like, you know, make anti-racist changes in our lives and in our businesses? I think it has to come down to a heart change. Like, and that's what I've kind of always gone back to, and especially in these past 6 months, is like, you know, we can change the way that we word things online. We can change the way that we do business and who we do business with. But unless, like, your heart is in the right place about it, and you're doing it from a point of, well, this is, like, you know, from my perspective, like, what God has called me to do. Like, you know, if we're called to love all people, then it's just plain and simple, that's what it is. And so I think, you know, whether or not someone identifies as Christian, like, people need to at least have a heart change and recognize, like, is it profitable for me to, like, hate someone because of the color of their skin? Is it profitable for me to hate someone because of where they grew up? Like, obviously it's not a life-giving thing to focus on that. And that's, like, my hope is that it would kind of make people encounter those feelings in themselves and say, you know what, maybe I'm going to make a small change today because of this.
That's powerful. And I think you brought a great point of, like, how profitable is it? And I think I always like to bring this up, like, even outside of, let's say you don't have an interest in the people part of it, but everyone has a interest in coffee still being here, right? Who's drinking coffee. And I think when we think about sustainability, a lot of times what we lose is, like, if Black and MLK kind of brings this up, right? But he says injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so if there is a anti-Black or anti-Indigenous bent in the production line or the production chain of coffee, right, whether we're talking about at origin or we're talking about in a shop with various gentrification practices or how people are treated or the culture of it, that we're going to miss an opportunity for coffee itself to be more sustainable, right? And one of the things that we found is that as we, specifically in the African-American community, connect with people who are growing coffee or who come from coffee-growing families in the diaspora, that connection being missed in coffee, a lot of times is a missed opportunity for children to be encouraged to pursue, right, redeeming the things that have happened to their ancestors. And so, like, I remember we had a conversation with one of my friends from Trinidad, Carissa, whose grandparents were coffee farmers. And it was something that happened in that conversation where we began to talk about our shared history with our grandparents being cash crop laborers. Right. And them coming from a history of slavery and being brought here to pick those cash crops, where we found, like, wow, you know, maybe we could return to this activity or to this industry and bring dignity as opposed to trauma.
Yes.
And that trauma is what pushes a lot of people away. And I think that, like, the Black community, specifically people who are descendants of the slave trade, reuniting and finding healing together is going to be an essential piece, in my opinion, and in the conversation we've had, in those cash crops still being available without slave or low wage labor, right? And people being willing, in a world where they can see the Migos and TikTok, right? They can see these things and still being willing to engage in it because they can say, hey, when I look at, you know, these rappers or whatever, I see dignity, right? I see someone who has worth. So why would I want to go do anything connected to farm labor? Right. But when you see, like, actually this culture, this dignity that you see here can also translate to the way that we do coffee. You can do coffee in a Black way, not just in a way where you're laboring to give it to someone else to rebrand it and call it, you know, a French roast or an Italian roast or something, that there's some power there. And I think that if all of us investing in a community in a world where we can be our authentic selves and our notes can show the way God intended them to be, right, with no sugar and no cream needed, creates a world where we have more diversity and where that diversity is able to flourish and be resourced so that we can continue to have a sustainable selection of coffees to pick from, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, I think that what y'all are doing is really important. We appreciate the partnership. Last thing I wanted to touch on before we go is just, like, you know, where can people go to get the coffee?
Yeah, you can go to our website, stay-golden.com. It should be one of the first coffees that pops up on the shop page. And then, yeah, you can order it that way.
Okay, great. Well, man, we thank you so much for joining with us. I just got a message from Asnake that he can hear the conversation, but it looks like we weren't able to hear him. So I'm going to... No. Yeah, I know. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send him a message to join the link. Here's the link. Try again. And what I would love for you all to do, you can say if you want, but I know that you have a million things to do today, and I got to head out soon too. So I'm going to shoot him a message, and we'll try to get this in really, unfortunately, really quickly.
Mm-hmm. No, that's all right. Hey, Bartholomew, I gotta run into this meeting, but man, pleasure. This is fun.
Yeah, man. We're gonna see you all soon. My wife was just telling me, like, she wants to go to Nashville. So
come on back down.
Yeah, man. Well, we appreciate y'all. Y'all keep that coffee black, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right, see you, brother.
Take care.
Bartholomew, I can stay on and is if we can get Asnake on here.
Yeah. I saw a really great comment.
Good.
And I wanted to share this. She said, it's from Carl Street III. Thanks for joining in with us, brother. I'm not racist. And this is in quotation marks. Really? So what Black artists, poets, filmmakers, business owners do you love, support, embrace? Is it really not about a single act in so much as it is embrace? How do you work to equalize your worldview that is inclusive to all people? You know what I mean? And I think that that's a wonderful sentiment. And I think that that's kind of... Ultimately, when we see in the scriptures, Yeshua says, love your neighbor as yourself, that love is determined by the way that we do it and not just our intention to do it.
Exactly. Right?
And so the definition of it is not just, well, I don't want to do negative things. That's kind of like anti-disestablishmentarian.
Right.
Like, I don't want to don't be against it. It's a lot of double negatives going on. It requires an intentional positive statement. I think that effort is kind of what y'all are doing. I know you and I spoke briefly about some of the initiatives going. I know that Nashville, it's funny, man. I remember I went to Nashville and I was like, oh, so there's no Black people in Nashville. Because I didn't see them. And apparently, like, you know, that's a frequent thought, but it's not true. Like, Nashville has a large Black population. I can't remember. Did people say they live on the north side? I'm trying to make
north
sure.
North side, yeah.
The north side, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Which is also, a lot of times I associate the south side with where the Black people are. So, okay, cool. So the north side is where the Black community is. Gentrification is a growing issue in a lot of cities. And so you mentioned a couple different organizations that you felt like were doing some really great work to address gentrification. Would you mind going into some detail about those organizations?
Yeah, so one that we started to talk to is the Agrarian Trust. And they're actually, like, they're a nationwide, I think they're even worldwide at this point, organization. So they work to make sure that farmable land is given to people of color, to indigenous people, to the area, so that it doesn't get taken over by development or even just, like, you know, farmed by another white family. And I think that's really powerful, because when you think about, like, how much land, even, like, you know, in America, like, not just thinking about, like, in Africa and other, like, coffee growing countries, but in America, how much land was stolen from Black people here as well.
I mean, sharecropping is such a real part of history that gets ignored. And even the fact that, like, at post, part of the agreement in slavery was that people, in ending it, is that, like, well, people are going to receive something to own, right, as a way to be citizens here. And that never happened.
And so I think it kind of goes back to, like, this is what the right thing is to do. Like, this is owed to these people. This is what they should have. And so when we heard about the agrarian trust, we were, like, just super stoked on it.
Wow.
And definitely want to support them in what they're doing, just around the world. They're doing great things.
That's powerful. And I think that ownership kind of is one of the central tenets as we think about the 1616 project, is like creating spaces for, like, people of color, specifically Black people, to maintain ownership while engaging in coffee collaboration. And I think that's kind of what was lost, is that, like, you know, one, credit was lost, history was lost, but also ownership and financial opportunities, generational wealth were lost. And so in order to intentionally be a part of moving this forward, I think it requires us, like, to think about business transactions where people maintain ownership. And I know that you all choosing to partner with us on the 1616 project was big in regards to that too, just because, like, this is a project where the 1616 collaboration is one in which we are able to financially break bread, as well as speak about the education here. And I just think that's really powerful. And I think it needs to happen more often in the industry, specifically for young Black businesses who, whether we be at Origin or whether we're here in the States, it's like there's a need and a desire, like, man, for people to maintain equity, right? And to maintain the opportunity to be a part of crafting the narrative around something.
Well, and it's like the
side of it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, white people have been given so much privilege, so much opportunity, so much above and beyond
speaking of land.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, I know that depending on who you're talking to, the word reparations can get a little bit hot topic, but, like, I think it's that is what has to happen. Like, there has to be some kind of give back, intentional give back, that says, you know, this was taken from you, like, and it wasn't right, and it wasn't necessarily something that I personally did, but I have to be able to speak for, like, what generations before me chose to do. And I think that really informs, you know, how we, like, as parents as well, like, what choices are we making today that our children are gonna have to, like, clean up after later?
Yeah. And I think that's powerful. Like, I think that that's one of those things where saying, wow, why do I have to do this? I don't think you have to do it. I think it's a choice to make, in saying we can choose to participate in repairing the wrongs of the past. And I don't think that's just a white choice. I think that's a choice that all people have to make, because we have shared history and we have unique histories. And in all of those things, we have to choose to say, well, this happened and it wasn't necessarily my fault, but I have to choose to engage in fixing it, or I can leave it the way it is and allow it to get worse. And as a Black person, I have to make that choice in my own community. Right. Like, I have to make the choice to say, well, I didn't really, like, think about it like this. A bunch of people break in your house and make a mess. They leave. OK. At some point, I just got to clean my house up.
Yes. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I can go and pursue justice. I can seek to get the things back that were stolen. I can request that they come in to clean up and get a vacuum cleaner and do community service. But I can't wait on that to happen for my house to get in order, or for me to work on my house. And that's how we feel in our community. Coffee is one of those ways for us to kind of do what we call self-imposed reparations, where it says, like, our community needs access to wealth, right?
Yeah.
We ask for reparations for a very long time. I hope it happens, but I'm not waiting on it. Right. And I'm not waiting on anyone else to even consider caring for my community. That's why I was an educator for 10 years in the hood in Memphis and in Chicago. And now we're moving into coffee education in our community, which is a weird thing to even think about. But, like, we're like, we want to provide access to wealth. And, like, right now, I just got a text from one of my mentees, like, hey, man, you know, I need somewhere to stay tonight. And it's like, hey, look, OK, we're going to come pick you up. You know, and this is something we can't it's upsetting that these things happen. It's upsetting that this is the reality. But I think when we're people who are empowered by the spirit of Yahweh, mm-hmm. that we have a choice to say, I'm going to be a vessel for God's work in the world. And I don't have to come at that from a position of, oh man, I hope it works, or I don't know. It's like, no, I'm going to trust whatever I do that the Lord is going to bring to completion the labor that I cannot complete. And so therefore I can labor all the more fervently, right? Because I don't have to worry about, well, am I going to be good enough, or do I have the right idea, or am I smart enough? No, it's the work that I've seen so often in my ancestors, which is I'm going to work and be faithful.
Yep.
And then when I die, my children are going to work and be faithful. And we're all going to continue to move forward in this larger labor until the Lord returns. And I think mm-hmm. that's a powerful thing that we're all, you got to make that choice in your life. Like, am I going to choose to participate in this labor? And we can debate about whose responsibility it is. But at the end of the day, you can choose to be a hand for God's work, or you can choose to ignore it.
Yeah.
And that choice that you're making, I think, is a powerful choice that y'all are making as a company. That's a choice we're trying to make, and we want to create space for more people to have the opportunity to make that choice as well. And, you know, sometimes it's simple just to say, hey, by buying this coffee, I'm supporting the work of anti-gentrification and coffee education in Black communities. Okay, cool. Maybe everybody can't move into the hood, right? Maybe everybody can't produce a coffee and do a collaboration with a small Black business.
Right.
But you can purchase a bag of coffee, or you can share information, or you can, you know, go and help some local people in your community start businesses or share information about how this. And we've had people send us, like, hey, here's a P&L spreadsheet, you know, like things that help us, you know, like, hey man, we had somebody donate 30 sacks of coffee.
That's amazing. And I think that goes back to, like, you know, like what the Bible does tell us is, like, you know, we're all given different gifts, and we all have different things that we're good at. And I think that speaks to, like, kind of what we talked about the other day on the phone, is like that one person is not going to fix everything. One person does not have all the answers.
Yep.
But when we all use the skills and abilities that we have that we really like, that are beneficial, when we're working together with those things, that's when we can start to see more change.
And it's, I keep returning to the wisdom of the scriptures. Like, there is this analogy of the people of Yeshua being a body, right? Mm-hmm. And how each body part is different. And I just feel like this is so important for people in doing anti-racism work, or when we even think about, hey, how does my coffee business look versus someone else's business? And what kind of niche? I feel like the scripture said, like, the eye shouldn't say to the foot, you know, like, you should be more like me.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like a roaster saying to a farmer, you should grow your coffee this way.
Yeah, I'm like, yo, well, first off, we get into that. I feel like I heard somebody say, this woman from Kenya, she said in the RICO symposium, she was like, look, farmers can learn to roast coffee. Roasters cannot learn to farm. Yeah. And like, that was like, I was like, hey, who needs who in this scenario? But I think also it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, like, that's a horror movie. If you had a body full of eyes, that's creepy, right? Like, we need, each of us have unique roles. And what needs to happen is that blood needs to circulate to each of those vessels accordingly so that they can operate in their fullness, because if they don't, the body suffers. Right, the body works out. And so in this situation, of course, blood has a lot of different ways you can look at it, whether we're talking spiritual or whether we're talking like literal, but also like financially, like we need resources, financial resources flowing. And so like, you all donating a portion of this to the work that we're doing, a large portion of this to the work that we're doing, I think is huge. And somebody said in the comments that we have to own the reality that is now. If we inherit a position of power, then it's our duty to wield it to benefit who really works for what it is, what they're trying to communicate. And I think that's powerful. I think that's really powerful, family. So, man, it was a great point to end it on. I think I missed Asnake, so I'm going to try to follow up with him at a different point.
Okay.
Hopefully, you know, Asnake is the producer for this coffee. They did an amazing job with it. It's amazing. It's delicious. And I would love to talk. I know there's a lot going on. We actually just finished a conversation yesterday with two Ethiopian activists who are seeking to see ways that the coffee community can partner with what's happening in Tigray right now. to that ethnic group. And so, man, I feel like I was like, man, I'm gonna get to talk to two Ethiopians this week. I'm blessed, right? I'm blessed. But looks like we'll have to follow up with him later. But man, I appreciate you for being here. I appreciate you for joining us. Carl, thank you for joining us in the comments. Sean, shout out to you as well. Asnaka, I know you were able to hear us, but we were not able to hear you, but we missed you. You're thought about. I'm about to make some of your coffee right now. And yeah, that's our time for today. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we leave?
No, I'm just so grateful that we got to do this. Like it has given me life this morning, and I'm so encouraged and happy to be working together.
Yeah, this is fire. This is fire. This is fire. Look, we'll talk to you soon. Y'all keep the coffee black. All right, peace out.
Bye, Bartholomew.